because it's been in lockdown, I haven't been able to go and get like a pedicure done or anything. So I bought some of those like skin peeling feet booty things. Alana, have you done one?
Okay. My mum bought me one of those, which I don't know was like a big fuck you or was she was trying to be nice, but I was too afraid. I was too afraid to use it because the one that she bought, it's like an actual like razor for your feet, like for your heels and stuff. And I was afraid I was going to like rip open my foot basically. So
I'm talking about the plastic bags you put your feet in and they've got like the solution
yes,
in them.
Yes, I've done those too. Yes.
They're so disgusting.
Is that where you like shed your skin?
It was vile. It's like a plastic booty and it's filled with chemicals. Already a great start. You put it on your feet for like 90 minutes and then you take it off and you wash your feet and then like nothing really happens for a couple of days and you're like, is it working? Is it not working? And then all the skin on your feet just starts to like shed off.
Oh my God,
no. It is fucking disgusting.
Yeah, I got, they're just like generic plastic bags and I was like, I don't know what's in this, but I guess I'm gonna put my feet in them. And yeah, you're right, nothing happens and you think, okay, well this was a waste of money. And then I don't know if they're different or whatever, but the one that I did, it was like, yeah, your feet are gonna peel for like 2 weeks. And I swear to God, for 2 weeks I was like leaving bits of skin all over the house.
That's disgusting.
And it's not just like it's not just like, you know, little bits of skin. All right, let's get real here. It's the whole foot skin, the whole thing.
Oh,
it is awful, awful, awful.
It's like flappy bits of skin. It is so gross. Yeah. There's one point where I took off my sock because I had to wear socks around the house because otherwise I was just sort of like leaving like a trail of devastation wherever I went. And I like peeled off my sock and it's almost like an entire toe of skin like came off. It was so gross.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But now I have the softest fucking feet in Kent, so.
Amazing. I see, the thing is, I looked into this because I was thinking I need a pedicure because I, especially in lockdown, I go like revert back to running a lot. But then I cannot stand to sleep with socks on. Like, I get really hot feet when I sleep. Weirdly, my daughter does too. And so I was like, but the thought of like your feet being shedding while you're like in bed, no thanks. Also, don't commit a murder. Like, because like imagine
DNA
your DNA
everywhere.
Everywhere.
I like how it's the first thing you think of.
You know, I mean, I'm trying to keep us on brand here.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Murder Friends, the podcast where three friends from three different countries talk about murder. My name's Alana, and I'm Canadian.
I'm Anna, and I'm American.
My name's Hannah, and I'm British.
So sit back and relax. You're among friends, and let's talk murder.
So what have you guys been up to? Anything exciting? There's a lot of, I think if we could do the little cricket noise in the background, that would be great.
Yeah, I've done nothing.
I don't even know what day it is, to be honest.
No.
So my favorite little coffee spot is still open for takeaway. So sometimes I'll do like a morning run and then just go by, and because I'm still trying to like, you know, where I can support the odd business, get a takeaway coffee. And I was talking to him and I was like, I was thinking we were like well and truly in week 3 of this 4-week lockdown. We were like still in week 1. And I was like, yeah. Oh no, this is not a good sign. Like, yeah, it feels like.
No, time has no concept anymore. No. I noticed on my social media, some of my family are American and they're posting, you know, about Thanksgiving and stuff. And I realized like, oh my God, like it's almost American Thanksgiving. Like what the fuck happened?
Yeah. How did it become November? Like I feel really cheated out of this year. Like I don't even know what happened. I think we had like 2 months we were sort of allowed out. But that was, yeah, that was about it.
Something that is giving me like great joy in this like little period is like it's still pretty early, I like to think, to put your Christmas decorations up. Mm. But the amount of my neighbors that have got their fucking Christmas lights up already is giving me like so much joy. It's almost like everyone's just gone, fuck it, and just gone for it.
And I love it. I'm on board like, with that. Like,
yeah,
what else do we have to do?
But they're like, a lot of my neighbors go like full hog. Like Christmas tree in the window. Don't they put those little, like, little ice cool lights at the front of the house?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, I get it. Like, do what makes you feel
good.
I'll
be honest. I'm putting my tree up tomorrow. There, I've said it. Amazing. I said it into the world. I'm putting my tree up tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, there's always that, oh, you can't put your stuff up too early. But honestly, this year has been the fucking worst. And I want to put my Christmas tree up, and I want to put lights on it, and I want to put the lights on. Not like we're going to hide the tree, you know, and put the lights on December 1st. No, I'm going to put the lights on now because that's what I want. And I want to look at my goddamn tree.
I've always been like a staunch believer of like 1st of December for anything Christmassy. Mm. I have like a Rat Pack Christmas album that I like refuse to play until the 1st of December. But this year, in the put it in the bin, like, I'm playing it now. I do not care.
Yeah. We're going to get ours out this weekend. We're getting all the decorations out too. We've already just, like, I've already said, no, it's happening. Like, we're just going to, I think everybody has the same mood. Everybody's in that mood. Everyone's just like, what? Why not? I was wearing Christmas Brussels sprout socks yesterday. I was just like, full on, you know, it's Christmas. We're getting there. I don't know. You guys have to let us know out there. Are you guys decorating? How do you feel about this? I feel like are we allowed to do this early this year? I think so. I think we'll make an exception.
Should definitely be allowed. It's definitely a thing.
100%.
Big fan.
One thing I started to do was, and I know you guys are fans or have seen all the movies, but I started to watch the Harry Potter movies with my daughter, and I'd never seen them. So we started.
Oh my God, Anna.
Have you not seen them?
I haven't seen Lord of the Rings either.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, Anna.
I know, I'm sorry. I tried to watch Lord of the Rings. I went to the movie theater and I fell asleep within 20 minutes in the theater.
And honestly, she's ready to get up and punch you. Like,
yeah, no, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Let me set the scene. Way back when, I think it was probably the second film, or maybe even the first one. Anyway, in Canada at this point, you can't book your cinema seat. Like, you have to just show up early. Mm-hmm. So I remember my sister and I want to say it was for the first film, we got to the cinema 3 hours early and sat in the hallway and waited. And the idea was, because I was quite small when the first one came out, and so we waited in line, and then once they opened the doors, I could kind of like squeeze past people because I was like elbow height for everyone. And I got us the best fucking seats.
That's amazing.
The movie itself is like 3 hours. So we were there for like 6.5 hours basically for this one film. That's completely unrelated. And please don't share that story with anybody else. I don't know why I just said that.
Don't worry, nobody knows now. Your secret's safe with us and all our listeners. I also, around that time period, slept through the movie Black Hawk Down in the theater, which is like the loudest fucking movie ever. So I was just wasn't doing well with the movies. I don't know. So anyway.
But Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter are such perfect, like, wintertime films.
Yes.
I usually watch them every winter. Mm. They're so, and like, to be able to experience that for the first time with your daughter would be so fucking cute.
She loves it. She's already like, Mom, I want to be Harry Potter. And I was like, really? Great. Like, so I was kind of, because she can be like,
you're
a
like
bit,
orphaned? What?
Yeah. I'm like, should we send you away? I was like, oh, but do you like, you know, what's her name? Hermione? Hermione? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's
and I was
her
like,
name?
She's like, no, Jesus, I want to be Christ. Boy Harry Potter. I was like, all right. Go, all girl. Right. You can be whatever you want. Sure. So she's actually quite for like a 6-year-old, she's quite a little hard ass like about stuff. Like, things don't really scare her that much. But for some reason, the elf, a house elf or something? The
go and just guess his name.
Is it Dobby? Dobby. Am I close?
This is amazing.
Okay, we were getting ready for school. We watched one half one day. The next day, and she's like, apparently it frightened her. She's like, Mom, Debbie the elf, like really. And I was like, Debbie. Even I know that wasn't his name. It's not Debbie. But yeah, so no, it's been great. So I totally recommend. Like, that's a really fun experience to watch something quite like magical, like with your child. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen it, so I'm like getting quite into it now.
Aww.
All right, we've got true crime news, and really, I just have one major story. It was quite a big one over the last couple of weeks, and that is that Peter Sutcliffe, also known as the Yorkshire Ripper, died. he died of coronavirus, actually. He did have previous, I think he had heart problems, so he did have pre-existing conditions. But yeah, the Rona got him. God, I can't even, that makes me want to vomit. I can't believe I just said that. Anyway, don't tell anyone. Yeah, so Peter Sutcliffe, 74, died at University Hospital of North Durham, which is about 3 miles away from the prison he was serving a life sentence. He had previously been at Broadmoor, as he had been deemed mentally ill, and so he was there for many years and then moved to prison because he was, I guess, they thought he was well enough to do prison time. The convicted serial killer is said to have refused treatment and had obviously underlying health conditions. Sutcliffe grew up in West Yorkshire and worked a series of different low-skilled jobs after leaving school at 15. So I'm just going to like sort of really, this is a bit annoying because this could be like a whole True Crime 101 in itself, but I will, for people who maybe don't know who he is, especially those who aren't from England, I will just sort of briefly say stuff about him. He got married in 1974, and he lived with his wife in Bradford until the time of his arrest. He developed an obsession with female sex workers. He was dubbed the Yorkshire Ripper by the press as his notoriety grew in the late 1970s. There was an atmosphere of terror in the north of England, and police told women to stay at home at night. Sutcliffe murdered at least 13 women across Yorkshire and the north of England in the late 1970s. Nearly all the murders took place in West Yorkshire. Two happened in Manchester. He's also known to have attacked at least 9 other girls and women between 1969 and 1980. Many of the survivors needed surgery, had life-threatening injuries, and were severely traumatized. Like, this guy's an all-around, obviously, horrible human being. He was finally arrested in January 1981 after police stopped him in a car with a sex worker and found his car had false number plates. The day after his arrest, police discovered a knife, hammer, and rope at the scene of the arrest Sutcliffe had managed to discard. So following 2 days of intensive questioning, he admitted he was the Ripper. At his trial, he actually pleaded not guilty to the 13 charges of murder, but guilty to manslaughter on the basis of diminished responsibility. He claimed God had told him to murder his victims. And four psychiatrists diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. The West Yorkshire Police were heavily criticized for being poorly prepared for the massive investigation. Over the years, Sutcliffe was interviewed 9 times, but police failed to sort of cross-reference information. So it was like a massively sort of like bungled police investigation. It was, The assistant chief constable George Oldfield was also criticized for ignoring evidence from survivors of Sutcliffe's attacks and becoming fixated with what turned out to be a hoax tape. Also, many condemned the police for blaming victims, because especially after the force advised women to remain indoors at night. So in response, a number of Reclaim the Night marches were organized across the UK from 1977, driving home the point that women should not be blamed for male violence. Like I said, this is actually like it's a whole True Crime 101 on its own. But just in case people didn't really know much about him, I thought I would briefly sort of say what happened. Also, I do have all the names of the victims here, and I'm actually going to read them because fuck this guy. We get like this stuff with Ted Bundy where it's kind of gross. Like it becomes all about them. And then you're like, well, but all the people that they actually – the lives that were lost. I'm just going to read them. So he killed 28-year-old Wilma McCann, a mother of 4 from Leeds. 42-year-old Emily Jackson in 1976. 28-year-old Irene Richardson in 1977. 32-year-old Patricia Tina Atkinson in 1977. 16-year-old Jane McDonald in 1977. 21-year-old Jean Jordan in 1977. 22-year-old Yvonne Pearson in 1978, 18-year-old Helen Reitke in 1978, 40-year-old Vera Millward in 1978, 19-year-old Josephine Whitaker in 1979, 20-year-old Barbara Leach in 1979, 47-year-old Marguerite Walls in 1980, and 20-year-old Jacqueline Hill in 1980. So obviously that's who I wanted to leave you guys with, those names instead of that guy.
Yeah, I've had it on my like list for a True Crime 101, but realistically, like, no, I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
And that's like, not because you know, the victim's the most important part of the story. And but it's just, he's just a cunt. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it's gross.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Gross. And also, I mean, he did have paranoid schizophrenia, but most of people who do have that aren't violent people. Just FYI. Yeah, you're
more likely to suffer violence than you are to cause violence, aren't you, if you have a mental health issue?
Yeah, well, also, a lot of them end up taking their own lives in the end, rather than it being a violent thing. That's why it's almost like, it's just frustrating. Of course, it sounds like he probably, I don't know. Although he was then later, I think it was, I want to say this off the top of my head, 2016 maybe, he was actually moved into a regular prison because they thought he was capable enough to be in prison and not in Broadmoor. So who knows if he'd been fooling people all along, or, I mean, I don't know anything about the case, I'm talking shit, but yeah.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
So for our review section this week, we are going to talk about the second season of Dr. Death. Now, Anna actually mentioned this one, which thank you, because I probably wouldn't have seen it, because it's like they've posted it as its own podcast, even though it's season two. So if you are looking for it, it's listed as its own thing, Dr. Death season two. It's not going to be with the original Dr. Death for whatever reason. But anyway, now this podcast got me so angry. And I told you guys in our group chat, I have a lot of opinions. And if I do go on a rant, I'm very sorry. But I just have so many feelings. So we start off. The podcast is listed as 6 episodes, but the whole story is actually wrapped up within the first 4. So I know they've released episode 5, which is a update of season 1. So I'm not sure what they have planned for episode 6. Whether it will be about this season or not, we'll have to find out. I actually really love that it was only 4 episodes. I haven't listened to a podcast that's only been 4 episodes, like, ever. And if anybody's out there looking to make a podcast, go ahead, do 4 episodes. I am not complaining. And because there's only 4 episodes, I really felt that there was no dragging on. There's no, like, padding, or they're trying to bulk out the story. It really does get straight to the point. So we meet a nurse who is shadowing another nurse at Dr. Fada's oncology clinic. I guess it's a clinic, you'd call it. Basically, she wants to see how the department runs before she decides to take a nursing job there. But what she finds is shocking, and she is stunned just by shadowing this nurse. There are so many regulations that are either completely disregarded, or rules are broken. Medical equipment, drugs, even medical waste isn't handled properly. All in all, she is shocked. Politely declines the job. No, thank you. Once she gets home, she gets online and immediately reports the office and the oncologist in charge, Dr. Fareed Fata, who is a Michigan doctor with a pristine resume. She leaves all of her contact details when she reports the doctor and the clinic, because she wants somebody to contact her. She wants to be interviewed and to tell, you know, what she's seen. Like, she's so upset with what she's witnessed. Meanwhile, we also hear from this, like, office admin guy who starts noticing things within Dr. Fada's office that aren't quite right. Things don't add up. One of the other, like, doctor people sort of offhand says something about how Dr. Fada's not doing things properly and he's treating patients wrong. Like, it's all just a perfect storm, really. And it comes to a head when the FBI get involved and we realize how big the issue really is. So in short, Dr. Fada told patients they had cancer when they did not. He gave chemotherapy to patients who did not need it. He overdosed and underdosed patients who actually had cancer. He did whatever he could to bill for treatments that patients didn't need, and then he could be paid from the insurance companies. Just like, let that just wash over you.
It's like truly monstrous. You know what I mean? Like, I think we've all probably, even everyone, listening, has had a family member or someone close to us or someone we know that has had treatment for cancer, have dealt with it in their life. And it's so devastating to the person, to the families, to everything. And especially, it's just so heinous to do it to somebody who doesn't even have it and put those horrible drugs in their system. Like, it's just, I can't. My mind can't, I just can't. How did he sleep at night?
So for me, obviously, this story hit pretty close to home as my dad died from cancer like 4 months ago, which just, and I had never really seen chemo up close until he went through it. And honest to God, it's like legal torture. Like, I don't think people fully understand unless you've actually seen somebody go through it. It's horrific. And of course, my dad needed chemo. Like, that was what had to happen. He had to have that. But like, chemo destroys everything. And its side effects are really horrific. So then you have to take drugs to counteract those side effects. But those drugs have side effects. And you think of like these people who were put through that, who did not need to go through it. Like, just breaks my heart. And we're not talking like a couple cases. Dr. Fatah had thousands of patients. Thousands. And who knows if he treated any of them correctly, to be honest. And so when I was listening to this podcast, I was like on my exercise bike because I'm in lockdown listening to Dr. Death. And I'm just like internally screaming because I haven't heard something like this evil, like maliciously, in a long time. Anyway, back to my rant.
You described it though perfectly. It's torture. It's literally... You're torturing people. That's why it's so. I know we talk about a lot of horrible crimes, but this is like prolonged torture of people who like didn't need it.
Yeah, it's sadism.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
He was even we speak with one woman who was put through this treatment, and he was saying something to her like, "Yeah, it's not really working. You might need to be on chemo for the rest of your life." Like, no. No, 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 no. Anyway, not surprising, there are patients who die under his care. And this is also heartbreaking because some were completely healthy when they met him and some had illnesses that were completely treatable. But either way, they died as a result of his treatment. And so we do have some interviews with like the loved ones of them, which I don't even want to, I don't even want to go into it. It's just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. So after the FBI investigation, we are finally in court. Dr. Fatah's victims and the family members of those who died get to face him. The podcast talks about how there wasn't a dry eye in the courtroom except for Dr. Fatah. So these people are just telling about their traumas, and he is just like, it doesn't even compute. So in the end, he pleaded guilty to charges of healthcare fraud, conspiracy to pay and receive kickbacks, and money laundering. On July 10th, 2015, he was sentenced to 45 years in a federal prison. Now, the podcast touches on various topics, which I thought were quite interesting, and I almost would have liked them to be expanded, and maybe we'll get that in episode 6, I'm not sure. But they do talk about how in the medical field, many professionals don't want to rat out other medical professionals because it taints their own career. So some people who had spoken out couldn't get a job again because nobody wanted to hire them on because they like called out another professional, which is so fucking toxic. It's horrific. And it also touches on the fact that this case wasn't really brought to light due to the mistreatment of patients, but actually the insurance fraud. So even though the nurse that we hear from, you know, said all these things are happening wrong and these patients are being put through treatment that they don't need, that wasn't enough to really get anything going. It was the fact that it was about the money that anything really happened. And of course, he's not charged with, as far as I know, he's not charged with any sort of mistreatment of patients. It's all to do with the insurance and the fraud side
it's
of
like,
it.
Because he ripped off the federal government as well, because Medicare, that's all they give a shit about.
Yeah, so they're pissed.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's also another reason why it's a bad idea to have healthcare as a profitable business. Mm. Look, like, fuck's sake. Sorry, I'm just angry. I'm angry all episode here about things. But, like, this is just, it's just like, you know, I'm not saying the healthcare system in England is perfect, but you're not going to have yeah, you know what I mean.
You're not going to have doctors swindling people.
Yeah, because it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way, yeah.
No, so it's like, yeah, exactly. Oh. Which is just, it's mind-numbing. And it is, it's upsetting. Sorry, you may, I've cut you off, I think, but here, but basically, here, go ahead. What, like, because I have another thing to say, too. Like, I'm a man.
There's so many rants in this podcast. I was just going to say, overall, I loved it. I love that it's only 4 episodes. It is deeply upsetting. And like Anna says, there's a lot to be angry about when you listen to it. I do thought it was done in a way that was quite respectful, and the interviews were really well done, and you really get a sense of the whole picture, even though it's only 4 episodes. And yeah, Dr. Fada wasn't charged as a murderer, but he is one. And it's shocking how, you know, he got away with that. Yeah, he's in prison, but he's not charged for the things that he should be charged with.
He even said when he gave his statement to the judge, don't they usually do that before sentencing to, like, I don't know, there's a name for it, I think. And one of the things that stuck out to me was he said to the judge, like, that he wasted his talents. He was sorry that he wasted his talents. That's what he was effing sorry about. Sorry. I hope no kids are around right now, like, when you're listening to this podcast, because
we swear a lot on this one, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was so shocked. And they, not even the chemo stuff. The chemo is horrific, and I would not wish that on my worst enemy. I hope no one has to go through that, and your loved ones don't have to go through that, because it is, like I said, it is legal torture. It's horrific. But we even hear about other treatments that he did, like this one woman needed to get her blood marrow checked. And so,
oh,
I don't know,
oh,
if you guys...
Oh, God. God.
I'm going to say it, so mute if you need to. You have to get, like, a needle. You have to get a needle into, like, your pelvis or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's really painful. And he purposely does it without anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And she was saying she had so much pain and lasting pain because he had done this, like, quite serious procedure without anesthesia. And he knew it. It's like this power thing, right? He's putting people through such horrific torture. And I swear to God, this guy, this whole podcast is a rage. And that was one of them. Even though it wasn't chemo, the chemo's terrible, but he was still doing other things that were really painful and traumatic to other people. And it was like none of it really mattered. To him, at least.
It was rage-inducing. In fact, if you're going to listen to this and you haven't already, I recommend exercising whilst you're doing it. Because yes. It's like... I was, like, jogging, so listening to it. Like, anger. So, yeah. I think it was a 5. Like, as in... I mean, it's a quality, wondery podcast. A lot of them are quite well produced in that way. And it was... I never heard this story. And it's so crazy. You know, I feel like... I couldn't believe that. I'd never heard about it. So yeah, I recommend it. Definitely. Check it out. It's only 4 episodes, so check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, 5 out of 5. It was incredible.
Yeah.
For the second part of our review, we would like to talk about Carmel, Who Killed Maria Martha. It's a 4-part series on Netflix. Each episode is around an hour long, and it follows the story of the death of Maria Martha Garcia Bustamante and what happens afterwards. It's directed by Alejandro Hartman, and it was released on the 5th of November. So I'll give you like a brief overview of the story. So in October 2002, 50-year-old Maria Marta Garcia Bustamante is found dead, slumped over a full bathtub, fully dressed by her husband, Carlos Caracosa. They live in a really prestigious, like, rich gated community called the Carmel Country Club, which is just outside Buenos Aires in Argentina. Think like guards at the gates, swimming pools, like the whole shebang. Maria Marta was 50 years old when she died. She's a sociologist and her husband was a stockbroker. So initially we're given Carlos's, her husband's, version of events. And this is a bullet pointed kind of what happens from his point of view. So they'd both been at Maria Marta's sister's house. Maria Marta had left earlier as she had like a regular appointment with a masseuse who came to her home. Carlos stayed behind to watch the football. He returns home and finds one of the community guards outside his house. And the guard says, "We've been calling the house. The masseuses are here. She's at the gate, but we can't get an answer from the house. So we need authorization to like let them in." Carlos thinks this is like a little bit weird, but says to the guard, "Let the masseuse in and I'll go in and check." So he goes into the house and he finds his wife fully clothed, sort of half slumped over a bathtub, but there's water in the bathtub as well. There's blood everywhere. He hears the masseuse pull up outside, runs over to the window, opens it up and says, "Leave your bags in the car. Maria Marta's had an accident. I need some help." So he says that it looked like she'd slipped over and hit her head on the tap. He drags her out the bath onto the bathroom floor. She's sort of halfway between the bathroom door, like in between. She's like in the doorway, effectively. Ambulances are called, doctors are called, other phone calls are made, and it's all a bit chaotic, but sadly, Maria Marta is dead. It's originally ruled as an accident by the police and Carlos, key point there, but this is where it kind of goes haywire. Carlos and the family get a pre-made death certificate signed so that they can make arrangements for her to be buried smoothly, and I don't really know what that means. I'm not, like, well-versed in Argentinian death certificates. But I think it means that if there are no suspicious circumstances around a death, then they can get one of these certificates done. This kind of makes things easier for sorting out funeral arrangements. So her body is placed in the family home, her hair's washed, her makeup is done, or this is kind of speculated. Her clothes are changed and she's laid in bed, this for like the wake. Not long after her death, and I think it's Maria Marta's stepbrother. I didn't like take notes because the whole thing is like subtitled. And it's hard to take notes and watch something that's subtitled like that. But I think it was Maria Marta's stepbrother. And he's like, hang on. She was like a fit and healthy 50-year-old. And she was in the bathroom and she was wearing like trainers, like really grippy shoes. I don't believe that she slipped. Can we do an autopsy? So they do an autopsy and they find that she's been shot in the head 6 times. And that's why she's dead.
Yes.
What?
Can I just no word of a lie. Six bullet holes in her skull.
But okay, this first episode, it must be a cultural thing, and perhaps this was a couple of years ago. This wasn't like, you know, but like, they just take the word off the family that she had an accident. Mm. Like, there was no police investigation. They just left her on the floor as well for like ages while the family gathered around her. No police came and like looked at the scene, and then they just had a wake. It was the most bananas thing I'd ever like what? How does this happen? Like, how do you not investigate anything around her death? It was so nuts.
So true. So the media go, I can only describe this as fucking wild on this. They suspect Carlos. They suspect a neighbor. They suspect almost every member of their family. And there are a lot of those. Like, it's a big family. They think it's a robbery gone wrong. They think Carlos murdered her because she found out he was money laundering. No proof. They think it was a hit taken out on her as she worked with a charity that dealt with missing children. Every imaginable scenario for the death of Maria Marta is like guessed up. There's even this allegation that Maria Marta and Carlos are brother and sister and they agreed not to have any children. It's like fucking pandemonium. It's bananas. Like, the whole thing is just, it's chaos. Like, the whole story. I'm not really going to go into any more specifics, but there are like a few trials and some people do go to prison and some people then get exonerated. But there's this like really big theme throughout the trials that someone pulled the trigger and shot her, but they were assisted by other people in trying to cover up the murder. So there are a couple of things that like smack of cover up. And so like the conspiracy theory wheels to start like turning. And I think this is why it was such a big like media like thing. So there's the masseuse was ordered to clean the bathroom while Maria Marta's body lay on the floor. So she was ordered to like clean up the blood. Someone finds a bit of metal in the bathroom and it looks like this little...
They call it the thingy.
They call it the thingy. It looks like this little tiny cylinder of metal that's kind of like been flattened at one end. And they call it the pituto, which is roughly translates to a thingy.
The thingy.
And they call it the thingy. And the person who finds it is like, oh, I don't think that's relevant. And flushes it down the toilet.
Yes. It's
oh my god.
No, you have to like dig up a septic tank to find her. It's madness. They find like this adhesive compound on her scalp that they think was used to glue up the holes. And some of the family like refused to give DNAs and blood samples for a bit. The story's wild, and I'm not gonna go into it any further because like big boy spoilers and it's complicated. But it's just
Can we just talk about the
It's just a lot.
Can we talk about the is he the prosecutor? Basically, he's quite, he's a bit of a silver fox. I don't know. I quite liked
dashing.
Him.
Very dashing.
And he's wearing what I can only describe as raspberry colored pants through the whole thing, like trousers. Not pants, trousers.
Yes.
Like, they were bold like choice for this.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Like how that's something you pick up on.
Yeah, that's what stuck out the most for me.
I'm so annoyed. I we started watching this. My mistake. It was like the end of the night. I was laying on the couch. And I was like, I'm going to watch this. I put it on. I forgot it was subtitles. I was like, fuck, I don't know if I can pay attention. So I'm laying there. I'm in my blanket. I'm like, all right, I can pay attention. And I get through like the main stuff. It's quite complicated too, because there's so many people involved. Mm. Like they have such a big family. And I'm trying to keep it together. And I must have fallen asleep within like 15 minutes left. So I didn't hear the bit about that she was shot.
I love that you're like, yeah, no, I've got this.
That's when it's like revealed as well.
Oh shit, because as I was falling asleep, I was like, well, it's gonna be one of those stories like, did she drown, did she fall? You see those on Dateline all the time, and then you're just like, yeah, she was shot 6 times.
You're like, wait, what? Oh my God.
Sorry, I must spoilers. Have missed that part.
That's amazing.
I know we've watched like a lot of unsolved mysteries recently, so I can understand like that feeling going into this, and it is like an unsolved murder, so I was kind of a bit not hesitant to watch it, but a little bit hesitant to watch it. It's like 4 1-hour episodes long. And like you said, like it's subtitled and you have to pay attention because it's just, there's just so much information. But I think, yeah, once you get past the first episode, it's pretty good. But the first episode is a bit of a slog, I will admit that.
Do you know, it took me like 3 nights to get through the first. I kept falling asleep as well because I'll watch it at the end of the night. And for me as well, when I do watch a lot of foreign stuff. It's not that, but if I'm tired, the reading makes me sleepy. Like it puts me to sleep. So once you get through the first one, though, it like picks up.
Yeah, you got me in the right mood for it, definitely.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant, though. I'd give it like a 4.5 out of 5. Overall, there is like one shot at the end, which is like right at the end, and it kind of gave me chills. The whole thing is like really well edited. There's not a lot of like fluff, and it's just like it's cinematically good. It uses a lot of raw footage as well. So all throughout the episode, you're shown like the bathroom and the room, like where it happened and the layout. So you're like really, really familiar with this. And at the end, they have this really like eerie scene where there's a woman dressed like Maria Marta laying in the doorway, presumably like dead, and the camera sort of pans out, and then someone appears with like a clapboard and like leans into shot and snaps it closed, and then the woman like gets up, and the camera like continues to like pan outwards, and like a hair and makeup person comes into shot and like starts touching up her hair, and then you see that the room is actually on a set, and it's just so like beautifully done, and I live for moments in like shows like that. It was just
I just
like,
got chills.
I know.
It was like, ooh, like chef's kiss. It was, yeah, it was just, it was good.
Here I agree. I liked it. I am on at the end of episode 3, so I still have the last episode to go, which I'm going to finish actually because it's good. But yeah, I'll say like definitely like 4.5 for sure. It's like worth a watch. It's, yeah, it's good. It's an interesting story and it's kind of banana, so.
Weird crime time.
All right, weird crime time. Sorry, because it's a little bit corona-based, but I'm going to go for it. Man accused of shoplifting booze while wearing hollowed out watermelon as face mask. Yeah, so I'm going to post the pictures from the CCTV from this, by the way. So a Virginia man was arrested Friday after he and a friend were allegedly caught shoplifting alcohol while wearing hollowed-out watermelons as homemade face masks. Justin Rogers, 20, posted a TikTok video on May 5th that appeared to show him and another man buying 2 watermelons, scooping them out, and wearing them on their heads as they go grocery shopping. The melons entirely cover the men's faces except for 2 eye holes. So literally, you know that – it's like one of those – you know that – marshmallow head guy.
Oh yeah,
I don't know what that is. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it literally the whole watermelon's over their whole entire head, like it's like except for 2 eye holes. Okay,
so like I wonder how pumpkin protective those are.
I know. So like all I kept thinking about was how cold it would be. Do you know what I mean? Like wet on your head. Ugh. Anyway, okay, so this is all going on TikTok where they're like showing them doing it. The caption on it says, "Cool face mask hack." The video also contains footage of the men sitting in a large black truck. So another TikTok they do, clip is posted the same day, shows the melon-masked men. Say that. Melon-masked men. Melon. Yeah. How many times can I say that? Talking with a store employee while wearing the masks. So they go into the store. They're talking to them. And the caption says, or they say on there, the store worker says, "What's with the melon?" And the guys say in the caption, "Us, it da corona mask."
God.
Oh, I know. God. These people vote, by the way. Anyway, sorry. That night, surveillance footage at a Sheetz convenience store in Louisa, Virginia, showed two men shoplifting alcohol while wearing watermelons on their heads. Police Chief Tom Leary said in an interview with Oxygen.com, the footage showed thieves driving off in a large black truck, similar to the vehicle Rogers had been sitting in. So basically, they captured it all. They went in there with the watermelon. They have them in CCTV with the watermelons on their head. But they posted all of this to TikTok. So, like,
as you do.
They just, like, incriminated themselves as well. And literally, like, the town they said has, like, 1,200 people. Like, just, it's not, like, they're so dumb. It's just, but you have so to see stupid. The pictures. So stupid. Like,
I think it's just, like, the layers of stupidity. It's not even just, like, one, you're using a watermelon. That's stupid. Two, you've only cut eye holes. So, can you breathe properly? Like, that must have affected something. You then posted video evidence onto the internet of you doing it. And it's really, really, like, an obvious thing. It's not like you've got, like, a balaclava on and you're driving away in a black truck. You've literally got a fucking watermelon on your head.
Like, you're gonna remember two guys that came in with watermelons on their head.
Amazing.
Can I just say as well, every time we would drive down to Florida, my dad would make it very, it would be part of his mission to stop at Sheetz gas stations solely because they're called Sheetz. And he thought that was the funniest thing ever. And hearing you say Sheetz, just like, oh, it just hits.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about it on a podcast or I don't know where it came up, but there was those TikToks going around of kids, because you have to obviously wear masks now, but they were making themselves look like they were 70 and buying alcohol.
Oh.
So they'd have, like, they put the wig on, right, and they do, like, makeup on the eyes to make them look older. And then they've got the mask, which covers most of their face, and they're, like, trying to buy alcohol that way.
Did it work?
I mean, no. It's a little bit better than a watermelon.
I was going to say, man, I had to do it, like, the old-fashioned way with, like, a fake ID.
Someone else to buy it for you.
Or get somebody else to buy it for you. But the thing is, they're so strict on it. At least, I don't know about Canada, but in America, it's, like, so strict on it. Like, that you have to – they'll scan your ID a lot of the times. If you look under 50, they'll still ask for your ID. So you're, like,
yeah, it's really I find that's a big with. Difference, too, like – North America versus here, like in England, I am never carded. I've never carded, but anytime I get alcohol in Canada or go to the, like, liquor store or have a beer at a restaurant, like, they always card you. And I was out with my parents one time, like, last summer, I guess, and we all had beers and I got carded. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I don't have my wallet. Like, you know, I'm out with my parents. And they're like, sorry, we can't serve you. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll have an iced tea then.
Like, damn it. I know, isn't that, it's completely wild. Like, you would never dream in a million years of going out without your ID. Like, even us, who, you know, we're obviously over the age of 21. You just wouldn't go out without it, ever. Because you would always get carded. Well, I guess that's all we've got for today. Please check out our website, murderfriends.com. You can see our sources for today's weird crime time. And you can also for the Yorkshire Ripper story. If you have any ideas of cases that we should cover, we love looking at those. murderfriendspod@gmail.com. Just shoot us an email. Follow us on Twitter, MurderFriendsPD, and Instagram, MurderFriendsPod. We'll see you next time. Bye.